Wilson.
I mean, we've also had problems. I mean, sometimes we run into it, Pony, where you just don't know that somebody's going to keep going. It's the opposite.
Yes, Aditi is that one for us.
Mainly for me. I feel like I just never time it right.
What Bob was trying to say was in baseball, you have, yes, there is if admission by the commissioner's part, it's not an even playing field. But the small market teams do just good enough that as long as everybody's making money, they can justify keeping it status quo. Mm-hmm. And he brought up the Rays and Brewers. This year, it's the Royals who are 24-18 a quarter of the way through the season, and the Guardians who are 23-17 a quarter of the way through the season. You could even probably throw the A's in there too,
or 21-20.
Yep, yeah. They've got a winning record a quarter of the way through the season. So you have three teams in the bottom 10 in spending who are in contention to make the playoffs.
Milwaukee and Cincinnati hardly out of it in the NL Central.
Right, and that's how they get around it. If it was always the teams in the top 5 or top 10, and those teams had no chance, I mean, if they were still all making money, I think there's a chance you might still get status quo or static kind of support in baseball. But the fact that there are these like underdog stories, I think it justifies them pocketing their money and saying, hey, let's keep it the way that it is. The also unspoken thing there is it's not football. And unfortunately for us, the big market teams drive ratings like the Dodgers and Yankees in Red Sox and Cubs.
I've said to you many times since last year's World Series, if Rob Manfred could be guaranteed a couple of small market teams make it, but the Dodgers and Yankees end up there, or the Dodgers and Mets, but really Dodgers, Yankees are playing every year in the World Series, he'd sign up for that.
The networks who fork over all the money like Fox, they just don't want to see the Pirates play the Guardians in the World Series.
That or Pirates Royals is literally the nightmare world.
You know what I mean? I mean, that's just not something.
And you're not rigging the games or anything, but like they're not interested in that. And so when those other big market teams spend a lot more, that does tilt the playing field towards them.
Now, Bill Madden, who has worked for the New York Daily News and has been a baseball, see, New York's still a big enough baseball town where they have somebody who writes for the newspapers there who cover the entire sport. So usually I would be like, oh man, I don't want to hear a guy who works for a New York newspaper on the radio. He's probably going to be droll and boring. Well, this guy was actually very good. I have to give them credit for finding him, because he went into what Nightingale mentioned a little bit more expansively. And he also made it sound like there's actually a better chance that we see the owners come together and get something done.
Well, I think if it's ever going to happen, this is the time it's going to happen, because I'm hearing all over baseball that the owners are going to really push hard this time, and that they are.
How many owners, though? I mean, enough
to get it through. Yeah.
Wow.
I think there's, you know, and the fact that I think they're also counting on the fact that the players will cave on this thing.
I don't know I don't think that last part, especially if I'll take his word, he's well connected, obviously, that the owners might have more united,
right,
be a more united front. The players are repped prominently, the biggest name players, by one dude, Scott Boras, who I think has like an iron will on this particular subject,
which is over my dead body.
I said this to you before the show, and I'll bring it on the show, and you kind of agreed with the theory. If Scott Boras didn't exist, I think there might be a cap and a floor already. I think Scott Boras is probably the one guy on that side that will just dig his heels in and make this ugly and not capitulate.
So I played that clip because I think, first of all, here's someone who thinks it's actually way more likely than 1%, like Nightingale. Mm-hmm. And because it also then segues into this next one, which is actually the most interesting thing he said. He doesn't believe this Bill Madden, that it's teams like the Pirates who want a salary cap. He actually thinks teams like the Pirates are against it. He thinks it's teams like the Yankees, Dodgers, and Mets who would prefer it that way.
Regardless, it has to come with a floor, or else it can never get through. Most of the owners want. They want to stop the fact that Pittsburgh, Miami, the same culprits, are getting over $100 million a year and not doing anything with it. They want to stop that.
So their issue, the owners at the top, is they aren't convinced that all the revenue sharing money teams like the Pirates get are going back into player salaries?
To be very clear, it's usually owners versus players when we talk about a cap implementation, and this is owners clearly versus other owners.
Yeah. And that they want, okay, instead of doing it this way where we give you this money and then we don't know exactly where it goes, let's give you this money and then you have to spend
to a certain number. And they know they, as the big market teams, will always be at the top end of that number and spend right up to it. And that the presumption is we'll still have a big enough gap in or we'll still have a big enough advantage pony over the teams.
I got to be honest with
you. To the floor.
I think if that really is the crux of the issue here, I don't see how that would be a bad thing for the players. If it's not going to curtail spending from the big market teams and it's going to make the small market teams spend more money, that to me just sounds like it's more money that's going into
what makes it interesting,
the players' pockets, right?
What makes it, from my perspective as a guy that usually says I'm on the player side in pretty much all of these situations, they're not the billionaires, they're the millionaires. What makes it unique is that the way he laid it out and the way you and I are certainly both interpreting it, it really is owners wanting a cap to punish isn't the right word, but to bring in line other owners, not to curtail player salaries. It might have a slight cooling effect, but my God, I feel like there's been a bigger cooling effect on like the rank and file guys from teams just not spending money, right? Like players who might otherwise get a deal just have to wait there and twist in the wind until, you know, we're near the end of spring training. It really does seem like it is, what would you guess, 7 or 8 teams who want it badly because they're mad at about 6 to 8 teams at the bottom?
They don't want it to be a situation where they just write another very rich person a check and they just take the money and keep it for themselves, is how I took that comment.
So what do we know off the top of our heads? Donnie, you might be able to look this up. To actually vote to lock out here, right? Like to get this, as he put it, to get it, to push it through, what number of owners do they actually have to have?
I'm going to guess either 2/3 or 3/4.
Because obviously when the players went on strike in 94, I'm sure there were players who crossed the picket line, I think.
There were. Kevin Millar was one.
Right, and they were branded pretty much.
Former
for the rest
Pirate
of their
Rick Reed.
He was the other one I was thinking of. Thank you. Another just unbelievable memory moment. But that
Matt
wasn't,
Hergis, do you remember him?
I do remember Matt Hergis. He could throw gas back in the day.
Had a very, very attractive wife.
Just a random footnote. I would like to know what the owners, like if it's 2/3, if it's more than that, if it's less than that. I would love to know the mechanism by which they could enact a lockout, because then I think the war between owners would just be unbelievable.
Here's the last clip here from this guy. He said that if you really think about it, the floor thing is necessary to bring teams like the Pirates up to get them to spend more money, because in his opinion, baseball already has a salary cap.
Whatever salary cap there is, it's going to be right around where it is right now. I mean, essentially, we have a salary cap now. I mean, how many teams can really afford this luxury tax, you know, what it's gotten to now? Limit is $340 million or something like that. I mean, that in itself, look how many teams have gone over that. Well, maybe 3 or 4 at tops. So you essentially almost have a salary cap now because of the luxury tax. There's 3 different levels of it. The Steve Cohen luxury tax being the top level. But none of these other teams, these middle market teams, they can't go over that. And even this year, the Yankees are talking about how they're trying to do everything possible to stay over that third luxury tax level. The way I see it now, they already have a salary cap.
So if it's $340 million, I think the Mets and Dodgers are the only team in baseball that are going over that. If they do keep the number there, here's like the thing that's screwed up. If they say, okay, we're going to get it through, the players are going to buckle, we want a system where you can't spend more than $340 million, mm-hmm. and the floor is, let's say, $120 million. Mm-hmm. You still then have a situation where with a salary cap and floor, there's the potential for a team to outspend the other team by $220 million.
By basically 2.5 times.
Right. So
you think the floor would have to be higher then?
Well, not or the cap comes down.
But if the cap comes down, that's where I think you get the third party here becomes the players are.
Yes, because that's shrinking the amount of money that's in the game. That's not keeping it the same or expanding it.
To annoy you with a wrestling reference, that I believe makes this a triple threat match. If it would be, hey, we want the cap down to bring the cap and floor closer.
I mean, like, I hate to be Debbie Downer here, but it just sounds to me, just reading between the lines from these interviews, it sounds like there's the very real possibility that there could be a salary cap and floor, but it still doesn't fix baseball's economic issues. Right? I mean, if it's...
Well, doesn't that get back to the crux of it is that the economic issues are driven by the fact that the big market teams really do drive the sport financially, and that unlike the NFL, just the sheer inventory, the number of games every year make it a regionalized sport.
I mean, Donnie, do you disagree with that? I mean, let's say they make the salary cap floor $120 million, but the Mets, Dodgers, and Yankees can still spend up to $340 million. That still isn't fair.
No, I think it's just more about the incentive to have those teams at the bottom actually hit the threshold than anything. Like, we know that the big boppers around the league will have no problem.
But there's still going to be small market and big market disparities.
Yeah, there are, but it's not going to be as bad as it is right now.
Will you get much better players at the bottom end of that?
But it's still going to be bad. I mean, make no mistake about it. If I can spend $120 million and you're spending $340, you're still going to be able to put a much better team out there than me.
Let me ask you this then. If the salary floor is $180 million, how much difference does that make if the cap is still $340? If the salary floor is $200 million, there could be a team that's spending $140 million more.
Yeah, you got to bring those guys at the top.
But
way
if
down.
You bring the guys at the top down, that is where you enter in the Players Association being like, hell no. We're not taking a bath here because some of the small market teams won't spend. It's not our fault.
I agree, but what if you made the cap and floor really close to each other? Like, let's say the floor was $200 million
and
the cap was like $240 or $250.
Well, that's probably the most equitable solution where the players
don't
really
lose out. But I've heard
nobody
talk about that.
Because I think it's a non-starter for the small market teams to say, wait, we have to spend how much money this year?
Could you imagine that?
But that's where it being a regional sport with individual team television deals is a problem. The NFL doesn't have that.
Like, the Dodgers have to dump $90 million in payroll just to get under the cap, and the Pirates have to spend like $130 million more to get there?
Am I being clear about this, though, about the television contracts part of it, which is why the NFL can exist as it does? The NBA, it's not a perfect comp with the NBA, but you've got 162 games. Most teams are playing 150-plus of those on regional television or streaming. You're not going to be able to have the kind of nationalized television deal that has made the NFL's kind of parity and prosperity possible.
For a game that starts in less than 2 hours, I think that's because of O'Neal Cruz's back injury. They did activate Isaiah Kiner-Falefa today, and that is your injury report brought to you by Shenderovich, Shenderovich and Fishman. They've got your back, not your wallet. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa posing for pictures at Citi Field with Scott Kiner, the son of Pirates legend Ralph Kiner. Because Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is a distant
second cousin
of Ralph Kiner. And so this was the first time he met someone who was that close to Ralph Kiner. And those who were at this event at Citi Field, members of the Pirates media, said that Isaiah Kiner-Falefa was very, very moved by it. There were tears that were shed, that he thought it was so cool that he was meeting distant relatives who were part of a great baseball family.
Do you think Austin Bechtold has any idea that after his Pirates and playing career was over, Ralph Kiner had an illustrious run as a broadcaster?
I don't think Austin Bechtold knew until this very second, because he's listening, that Ralph Kiner even ever played for the Pirates.
Come on.
Yeah.
Do you think Austin knows who Branch Rickey is?
Yes, because I've heard Joe mention Branch Rickey on the show before.
Okay.
Malzi, you have a big announcement you want to make now.
I don't know if it's a big... See, you
this
frame
is
it
huge.
This way. You frame it as a big announcement, and I tweeted about it, and I will stand by the tweet. The tweet was bold prediction. Steelers announced that Rodgers is signing this coming Tuesday, as in tomorrow.
So Chris Mueller is reporting that Aaron Rodgers is going to sign with the Steelers
Very
tomorrow.
Funny that he does this. I'm predicting that I think it'll happen tomorrow. Very funny, Donnie, that he does this.
But
he wants the heat off of himself so badly, he is trying to get sound bites created.
Disagree.
Chris Mueller predicts this.
No.
And here's what he'll do. He'll say, Malzi, I believe you. I just want you to get proper credit for it.
Well, wait a minute. If you are right, then...
Oh, it's a big W.
It's not about heat. That's going to be tremendous. You're going to be the person who got it right first.
I had somebody tell me the following on Saturday, and these are the dots I tried to put together, and I'm going to summarize it to make sure that nobody could possibly know who would be, you know, getting discussed here. Somebody said, hey, might have a little interesting bit of info. It's one of those so-and-so works with so-and-so, and... Essentially, one entity in town has something that they want to unveil this week, and somehow there is a connection with that entity and the Steelers, and that the Steelers more or less said, if you'd like your little your announcement here, and they meant this like not like patronizing you, but if you'd like your announcement to get the attention it deserves, we'd suggest you don't do it on Tuesday. Implying, of course...
Now, is this entity a big, big entity that the Steelers would want to protect and take care of?
No, it's an entity that the Steelers would want to work with, hand in hand.
Do they already work with this entity?
Probably. I don't know that for a fact. I'm just saying their interests would largely be aligned.
So the Steelers believe something is going to happen tomorrow where it captivates everybody's attention and becomes the one thing everybody's going to be talking about on going to be talking about tomorrow?
Big announcement Tuesday is the upshot from the Steelers that they said whatever you want to have happening and whatever you want to get out there,
it's
going to
get lost.
It'll be the equivalent of the old Friday news dump. You wait for something bad to happen, or if it's something bad does happen, you wait for a huge story for as long as possible.
I mean, when you put it that way, it makes me think that...
I don't know what other thing the Steelers would have to announce. Everybody knows, you know, the draft is coming here. They have that big clock already out there. Everybody know
the big clock.
Everybody assumes that they're playing the Vikings, right, in the game in Dublin. I think you were the one who tweeted that out.
Yep.
So what else is out there? Now, the Steelers might not look at, like, you tweeting the Dublin thing as news, even though we've all reacted to it. They might, in their own minds, because the schedule
reset. That's not a big announcement.
Right. The only thing, my point is, when I was told this, and it's not by somebody who, like, blows up my spot all the time and tells me a bunch of stuff that doesn't come true. Like, this is a person who I think would only tell me if they had an inkling that this could really be a scoop. What else do the Steelers have other than announcing that Rodgers is signed and he's going to be their quarterback that would dominate the news cycle in a positive way?
That's what I mean. So just to make sure I hear you right, you believe the Steelers will make a big announcement tomorrow.
Yeah, and I believe that big announcement's Rodgers.
There you go.
Yeah, that's what I believe based on what I was told.
Donnie,
here.
Do you think Steelers Vikings in Dublin constitutes, quote, big announcement?
That's the first thing I told Chris when he brought this up to me earlier. I think.
Wait a minute, you told him before me?
No, he told both of us.
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Well, he told me
he was just kind of off in his own world.
I saw the prediction. I knew he had made the prediction. I didn't know that he went into the whole.
I didn't go into super big detail.
You were at lunch with the mystery Steeler when this conversation happened. I wasn't back there with you guys.
Well, I had one with him before I went to lunch. He beat you in.
Well, yes, I know that.
You had a pole down in your neighborhood.
A pole came down. The power went out. Stella's watching A Bug's Life. She's riveted by it. All the power goes out, and then. Two huge explosions go off.
That sounded like you were about to make a sick beat, then...
Yeah. And just a telephone pole down.
Wait a minute, you live in a very new neighborhood. You got a telephone pole still?
Telephone pole...
I thought all your stuff would be buried.
It's a little white lie by me. Telephone pole is like, if you like immediately turn out of our neighborhood, right down. So blocking and exit from our neighborhood.
Wow. Well, they had to get that one fixed, I would imagine, quickly. That's the only way in and out of your neighborhood, right? It's a
there's
one entrance.
There's a back.
There is?
There's a back, yeah.
Well, you do live in a sprawling neighborhood compared to mine. Your neighborhood just goes forever.
Anyway, so you guys were having big announcement debate.
Yeah, and I made the joke with Chris. I said, folks, Steelers, Vikings in Ireland, official.
I think that if we didn't know they were playing in Ireland, and we were going to learn tomorrow...
All of
that the Steelers
details.
Were no, just that they were going to play in Ireland.
That would be a big deal.
That would be a big announcement.
But we know, and we all are pretty much in agreement. We know who they're playing.
But just who they're going to play when the cat's been out of the bag for a while, that ain't big announcement. That's not going to have everybody like, stop what you're doing right now and sit down for this news.
Right.
The Vikings are the team the Steelers are playing, and that's why I think you're right.
So here's the one
we're
other.
We're getting Aaron Rodgers tomorrow. Wow. Kick your feet up and just open up those phone lines, Donnie, because we're going to get 4 hours of Aaron Rodgers is finally here tomorrow. And guess what? He's playing Neville on Wednesday.
So here's the other part of this story, why I at least think it's worth saying and why I'm willing to go and put my giraffe neck out there and get it, you know, my head cut off if I'm wrong. It's also scheduled release day, which we have long hypothesized would be like the initial cutoff time where once the schedule's out, or like I'm sure the schedule's done now, right?
Oh, 100%. The actual schedule is coming out Wednesday night,
Don? Not tomorrow. So it's close enough to that where since the schedule's done, the NFL's not changing a bunch of things on the fly to accommodate Aaron Rodgers. I'm pretty sure they already know, like no matter how cloak and dagger he's tried to be. This would just seem like a pretty opportune time to do it, right? Because if you're the Steelers, you're going to do this, you're proud of it. Maybe the fans in town are like more split on it. You don't want that swallowed up by the actual schedule release, which is a broad NFL story. You want your own little day in the sun.
And the NFL would not want that either.
No,
the NFL would not want Aaron Rodgers stealing that shine off them.
It would not shock me in the slightest. Not that Rodgers would care about this. NFL gets this huge bump. Wow, here's a future Hall of Famer announcing that he is signing with arguably our most heritage franchise or one of the two or three biggest franchises in the league. Oh, hey, by the way, the schedule releases tomorrow, so continue to keep it clear for all your NFL news.
I actually agree with Chris on this this way of presenting it. I think the NFL would pressure the Steelers to try to get Aaron Rodgers signed before their schedule came out. Now, Rodgers would have, you got to twist his arm and get him to play ball. But I think their preference would be that everyone knows that Aaron Rodgers is on the Steelers roster. When these schedules go out, that way people can say this Steelers-Packers game is actually Aaron Rodgers playing against his former team and not just speculating or
it might be Mason
assuming
Rudolph
that it's going to happen.
It's going to be
right.
Will Howard or something. Now, Johnny
can't
the
you see
would be
Goodell talking to Rooney and saying, if you're really doing this with Rodgers, can you please get this done before Wednesday?
Can you make sure he's in the fold formally?
Yeah, a thought I had with that was if the powers that be, if they just kind of roll the dice on the Rodgers situation because they think they feel pretty good that it's going to happen. So let's say they have, for sake of time, week 5 Sunday night football. Or no, I don't know. I think that's right after their trip. Week 6 Sunday night football, Jets at Packers at Steelers, the Aaron Rodgers revenge game. But then if it doesn't happen, the NFL still gets to lean back on, well, it's still the Steelers and the Packers. People are going to watch it no matter what.
Right.
Donnie, I have a question for you. Do you think Pony is rooting for me to be right because, hey, wow, Mulsey would be right? Or do you think there's a little part of him rooting for me to stub my toe on this one because it takes a little of the
heat off
of him?
Why are you looking at me like that?
I can already tell his
answer.
Wait a minute.
I was trying to gauge Pony's body language there.
Just again, what heat exactly are we getting off of me right now?
Just all, generally.
A lot of heat, brother.
I think you're still facing the Pickens, picket to Pickens thing. That finally had a bow tied around that box, and you're still taking an occasional.
Did you guys see the bump Callis got on that?
The what?
Oh, yeah.
Callis just sent out one of my tweets of Pickett to Pickens is the new Montana to Rice.
Yeah.
And I think he said something silly like, this is the greatest take of all time.
Yeah.
And it did like 1.5 million impressions online.
That's like when I posted a video of like a big rally in women's volleyball that took like 2 minutes. It was like Nebraska and somebody, and I just wrote "Holy bleep!"
Yeah, but that's actually
and it did
cool.
Like 3 million impressions.
Yeah, that's actually like showing people something
I think
crazy
like
that
simple.
They didn't know about.
People like simple is better, and Callis is definitely simple.
All right, so what's your take here? You think I'm rooting against Chris to be right?
Just
about
a little
this?
Part of him. I don't think a lot. I don't think like his whole being is like hoping I'm wrong.
Well.
But he gave me the treatment that our guests get so often. Chris Muller, PGH. The Steelers are making a big announcement tomorrow, and I believe it is that they're signing Aaron
Rodgers.
And Rodgers.
Donnie just reposted it.
And I reposted it, too. This is what we do.
On one hand, if it does happen,
I'm going to be like Kurt
tomorrow.
Gibson pumping my fist if that happens tomorrow.
Right, but the whole show is filled. Like, it has finally happened. People can sound off for 4 hours. If it doesn't, then we can joke around with Chris, like, oh,
yeah, so what?
He had his moment here.
Yeah, it's just a It's the combination of the basic logic underpinning what I was told, like why that would, you know, make sense. The story is a very plausible story to me.
Yeah.
And it's not coming from a person who routinely just spams my text messages with BS. Quite the opposite, actually.
Yeah, they're idiots if they think that just the naming of the Steelers' opponent in Ireland is a big announcement.
None of that makes sense, man.